Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, presented by Betches Media. This is an exploration of all pop culture, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. We're looking at you, Tom Sandoval. Folks, welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is your pal Ryan, and this is your Wednesday episode. How the heck is everybody doing out there? Now, I didn't release an episode on Tuesday. I was coming back in from Chicago, and I knew that I was going to be on a podcast that I really, really enjoyed doing. We recorded it at the end of last week. It's called Your Bish Therapist, B-I-S-H, by Melissa Reich, and I just thought it was a fantastic conversation. She is a therapist who turned into a pop culture enthusiast, and I had a conversation with her in December on this show. I don't know if you listened to it, and I just thought it was fantastic, and I got the best feeling out of talking with her, and it's those interviews that give you energy. Those are the ones that I'm like, okay, yeah, follow that path. Talk to that person as much as you can. So I'm on her podcast. I'm the first guest she's ever had because she usually does solo episodes. But you should check out her podcast, check out the past episodes. And also, I just want to support people that are doing podcasting and getting their start and doing something very unique. So I figured you could check that out. I promoted it on my Instagram, which, by the way, did you see this morning? One of the best gifts was given to me. Instagram and Facebook were down. And I was like, oh, we're free. And unfortunately, Twitter was still up. But for that glorious hour, it was like, wow, what should I do with all of this spare time? I'm joking, but it is kind of nice to unplug, isn't it? It's nice. The thing is, though, I went to Chicago, hung out with my best friend for his birthday, and I still worked. You know, I was still able to put out Monday's episode, but you get a little taste of that doing things outside of a microphone, and it's hard to get back on that horse. It's hard to get back where you're like, oh my God, I was watching Vanderpump Rules tonight, and I was like, oh my God, these clowns, we're going to talk about these clowns for the rest of our days. What are we doing with our lives? They said it was supposed to be the best days of our lives. That's what the song at the beginning of Vanderpump Rules says. For the love of God. Oh, just get stupider and stupider. But we'll be doing a full recap of that stupidness on Thursday's episode and a Real Housewives of Beverly Hills recap on Friday. And I've got some interviews banked that I'll probably release as well. Fantastic conversations that I want you guys to hear. So sorry that I didn't do Tuesday, but there's so much of me out there that I figured it was okay. But we're back today, and we have a fantastic interview coming up later in the show. Remember, there are timestamps if you want to skip directly to that. Now, today we have a director of a four-part docuseries that hit Netflix. A competitor to Netflix, maybe. Mental note. No, it's four-part docuseries on Netflix that came out last week. It's called American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders. This is now like standing at number two in all of Netflix in terms of how many people are consuming this docuseries. It is wild. But we have the director, Zachary Trites, with us here today. And I just, listen, I love when I get to talk to people, documentarians also that like are chasing down a story of trying to put these puzzle pieces together. And it's a nice change of pace from talking about, you know, Vanderpump Rules and people just cheating on each other and lying to each other. You know, it's fascinating to actually turn your gaze to something different, to learn a little bit more about the world. And this thing is It's creepy. It's scary. You're going to learn something. Have you guys already checked this out over the weekend? If you haven't, listen to this interview. Tell me what you think. And also tell me what you think after you've watched the docuseries, because it is maddening. That's the word I kept coming back to. It's maddening. It just shows how you can go down these rabbit holes. And that, you know, we can relate this to reality shows too, is that now we make everything conspiratorial. Everything's a conspiracy theory. So I think, especially going into also an election year, I hope everybody voted today, it's something that we should be paying attention to. And it's wild. It's just, there's so many things out there of trying to find the truth, trying to find the real story, to cut through the noise. And I thought this was such an interesting docuseries because it attempts to do that based around a murder. Well, not a murder. I'm so sorry. What was presented as a trigger warning, I'm sorry, a suicide. But they go down a rabbit hole trying to see if this actually was a suicide or not, or if it was part of a cover-up about a large conspiracy theory that this reporter was chasing down. It's really intriguing on so many levels. But we're going to talk about a couple of other things before he gets here. I like that. I've already done the interview. He's not actually coming here. But like I said, there's timestamps if you want to skip right to the interview and then come back and listen to this stuff. Oh, you guys, how are you? You can tell I'm exhausted. I really am. So we got back in last night and I had to get up super early, not super. I got up like 6:30 a.m. to do Jeff Lewis's show, the extended, and I got to host it with Jamie Kennedy today, and it was great. But it went down this kind of emotional, talk about rabbit holes. We went down an emotional rabbit hole. We started talking about my mom, and I wasn't planning on doing that, but it was kind of a natural conversation. And I gotta say, I mean, Jamie Kennedy was so great with it. And we actually had this beautiful exchange where he was talking about the loss of his mom, talking about his family and his parents. And that's the one thing, right? That's the one thing. If we strip away all this kind of reality shows, documentaries and all that, it's all about people. And I have to remind myself of that. And being with my best friend this weekend, it's just made me, I don't know, it's made me think about so many things. And so many things. It's okay. I hope it's okay if I'm. And by the way, before I get into this whole rant, are you guys okay? Also, this might be, I don't know if it's going to be emotional or not, but I'll talk about some things. But, I hope you guys are okay out there. I'm thinking about you as well. I don't know. I did that. I had this conversation with Jamie Kennedy today, which, by the way, I never thought in a million years that I would say, hey, I talked about the death of my mom with Jamie Kennedy today. You know, the guy from Scream and tons of other projects. Yeah, I had a big conversation on the radio where people could hear it about that. Now, I talk about my mom all the time on this show, but it's interesting to do it on another show that people listen to that don't know me yet or don't know my family and things like that. But having that conversation, then coming off this weekend where I had so many conversations about my mom with my best friend. And that's the great thing about a friendship that has lasted decades is, you know, he knew my mom very well. He knew my mom very well. And we were celebrating him, of course, but that's the great thing about friendship is even in the course of celebrating, he wants to talk and honor my mom and honor his dad who passed away in the last couple of years. And you have this history of friendship that is really beautiful. But sometimes those people that know you the most, they'll call you out on things and, you know, remind you of when you are potentially hiding from things or hiding from people or not communicating and not holding your end of the bargain up. And I do this stupid thing. I don't know if you ever do this, is that I can talk to you guys pretty easy. But my actual people in my real life, I'm not the kind, ask anybody that knows me, ask anybody that truly knows me if I'm the person that will call them or even answer calls. I'm comfortable on text, but even then I really will isolate myself. And, I've always been that way. But then I think in the last 6 months, it's gotten even worse. And I don't know if, you know, you could attribute it to, of course, my mom passing and things like that. But also, I've just really put my nose to the grindstone and just tried to work as much and as hard as possible. And probably not in the most efficient ways, but if you know me, that's kind of my style. Unique. And you know, we had the 6 month anniversary of mom passing, about a week and a half ago. And I was, you know, in fact, that your bish therapist, we started talking about this last week, and I've talked more about my mom, and everything in the last couple of weeks than I have in the previous couple of months. And I think that's brought up a lot of things. And I think just being shocked at, you know, that 6 months went so quick, I think that was shocking to me. I mean, like, I knew it was happening, but you're just like, and then you're all of a sudden, 6 months. Wow, 6 months. It's been 6 months. And it's been so interesting because you hear so many other people's stories, and the common thread seems to be, it does not matter how much time has passed. Time does heal things, but at the same time, you'll talk to so many people, you know, I've said stories of talking to Sandra, who works with this show, and Meditza and things, you know, of like, well, I lost somebody 10 years ago and I'm crying about them right now. And you're like, wow, what a fun thing to look forward to. And I'm all for honoring and remembering and all of that stuff. But I think the question is, how do you do those things in healthy ways so you can keep going, so you can keep working, so you don't feel like things are helpless or hopeless or things like that? And I think sometimes I get worried when I will go down these rabbit holes of thought and memory. And then, like, even tonight, like I said, I try to watch Vanderpump Rules. Usually, I was going to say, usually that cheers me up. But I will say, probably not so much this season. But even then, I was just like, what are we even doing? What are we even doing? I like to get to that point where I can laugh at something, where I can find something silly. That's why moments like Billy Lee grinning like a hyena at Tom Sandoval coming out of a cold bath, that makes me laugh like a hyena. Those are the moments that I truly cherish. Are just those weird moments that just make me laugh. Or, you know, having Graham, aka Hippie, the dog, have a barking attack. That makes me cry hysterically because I'm just a weirdo. But even then, you know, watching that, it just wasn't hitting in any sort of way. But how we approach art or TV shows or documentaries, part of that component is how we approach it, how we feel in that moment. Haven't you ever done that, you guys, where you watch a movie and you're just maybe in not a great place to receive it? And you're like, well, that movie sucks. And then somehow you watch it like a year later and you think it's the best thing you've ever seen, because you realize you're now in a place to receive it, that you just weren't in the kind of emotional state you should be in to enjoy something. But sometimes, you know, art can actually help. It can make you happy. It can provide you solace. It can make you feel like you're less alone in the world. So anyways, yeah, coming off this weekend, there were so many fun moments, so many laughs, so many all of those things, but there were so many memories, especially about my mom tied in with my friend. And I've just been thinking about that and then going into Jeff's today, and I wasn't really planning on having that conversation, and I'm so glad we did. But that thing, it was like, it was early, and I think ever since then today, it just wiped me out emotionally. So I'm not at my best right now. And I apologize to you guys. And there's nothing more that I would like to have passion in talking about the latest Justin Bieber rumor mill or, you know, what Taylor Swift is doing and how she's potentially sick overseas, but still pushing through to do the concerts. And I'm like, I can barely push through to do a podcast right now. And I'm told, you know, from therapists, I'm told this is all normal, but sometimes it's very frustrating when you're like, well, I've got all of this stuff to do. Like, I was so on my game last week. I was so on it. I was so like passion and oh my God. And let's go over the Raquel Leviss court papers and let's talk about this and this. And everything was exciting. And it's interesting how in a couple of days, that you don't feel that same passion or drive. And that's frustrating. It's frustrating for me, you know? And then on top of that, we got this horrendous news today. So I apologize for just being a super bummer here at the top. And I do want you to stay around for this interview because I did find this docuseries fascinating. But all of a sudden I was alerted to news out of the Sister Wives show. Janelle Brown, her son, Garrison, he died at the age of 25. And this is another trigger warning, after apparent suicide. And if you watch Sister Wives, like I watch Sister Wives, you know him and you know his struggles. And he seemed like such a sweet kid. And it just goes to show you that life is really hard. You know that listening. I know I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. But I was already feeling a certain way. And then I read this and it moved me in another way. And it made me so sad on top of already being sad. Because you're like, man, people, we all have it. We all have, you know, each one of us have something. And like, but then I was trying to find like, how do we overcome things? How do we reach out? How do we tell people, you know?
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So, the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How do we communicate our feelings? How do we get ourselves unstuck out of moments? Now, Janelle, Cody's ex-spiritual wife, they already released a statement, and Janelle wrote, "Cody and I are deeply saddened to announce the loss of our beautiful boy, Robert Garrison Brown. He was a bright spot in the lives of all who knew him. His loss will leave such a big hole in our lives that it takes our breath away. We ask that you please respect our privacy and join us in honoring his memory." And I'm almost tearing up just even reading that again. You know, he, and they found him, his brother found him in his home. You know, and if you look at his social media, he just adopted a third cat last week and posted it. He passed away on Tuesday at his house in Flagstaff, Arizona. And if you watch Sister Wives as well, you know the relationship he had with his father, Cody, and especially over COVID and the pandemic and Cody's very strict COVID rules that really prevented them from being in each other's lives. Now, I don't think this is the time or place to get into my feelings about Cody. And if you watch the show, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because my heart goes out to that entire family. And, I really, though, Janelle seems like such a lovely woman, and especially coming off the last couple of years that she's come off of just in realizing who she was spiritually married to. And, you know, we saw, you know, these amazing things, how Christine, the other spiritual wife, you know, she got remarried and had such a beautiful wedding ceremony that they had on the show. And I got to meet her last year and she was just a bucket of sunshine. And I just had the best conversation with her. And you know me, you guys, I get nervous approaching people or having conversations. And I met her in person. She was just so nice and made it so I like that. I'm like, she's just a normal person. But we had a really nice conversation. And I will always remember that. But this made me very sad because Janelle seems, you know, just like a great lady. And I'm sure I'll have more things to say about Cody. And if you watch the show, you probably are feeling what I'm feeling. But I do recognize that he is going through a loss as well. There's not a lot I can say about something this serious. But I do want to point out that if you are going through something that can be very hard to admit to friends and family, there is a hotline you can call, 988, if you are struggling. It's a 24-hour suicide and crisis hotline. You can also text that number. And the one thing I would hope, and I know family and friends of any of ours would hope, is that if we ever got to that place and we couldn't communicate with people that we were close to, that sometimes maybe a stranger can help even. And that maybe just one chance, or just putting out a signal. Sometimes those little small steps and even big steps like calling somebody and talking to somebody, that can make the world of difference in your life, even when you are not feeling up to par. But I did want to mention this. It seemed like a really, really good kid. And I was very, very so sad to hear about that, as I'm sure you guys were so sad. So anyways, you know, I found out and I was just already in this state. And like, I love talking about my mom. Like, if you even heard that Jeff Lewis extended today, I was so thankful to talk about her. I think sometimes, Joe, just the reverberations, now I'm already developing a stutter now, the reverberations of that and the loss of her, it'll still leave me shaky at times. And I don't have the verbiage yet in how to sometimes honor her in the right way or even express my own feelings, because sometimes how do you tell people, I just feel bad, just feel bad. And sometimes I don't want to move. And I just don't have the energy, and sometimes you don't have that get up and go. So you're kind of working off of muscle memory of, okay, this is what it, okay, plug the mic in, let's talk, you can get through this. And you guys are the best audience anyways, but I know this is, you know, I like to, I like to love what I'm doing. And the reason I know that is because I love doing this, and I've done so many other jobs that I don't love. And I got to tell you, loving something that you're doing, it's so much easier. And it makes all the hard work so much better when you actually love it, when you actually put something out into the world. And I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily proud, but you're just proud that you get to communicate. But I also want to be honest in this capacity, is that sometimes I still have really down periods of time. And I don't think that makes me a bad person. I don't think that makes me, I don't know. It just, you can tell I'm just a little tongue-tied right now. And I have this list of things to talk about, but none of them, it's hard when you're dealing with somebody. And this is the thing. I know I'll wake up tomorrow and things will be different. I know I'll have a different outlook, a different perspective, but it's sometimes getting through these moments. And so I watched Vanderpump Rules, and then I wasn't even asleep. I just couldn't. And it's one of those things where you have the TV remote and you're flipping through everything. And there's so many things to watch, so many options, especially who our guests even directed a 4-part docuseries. Now I watched that, but that would have been an option too. But I'm seeing all of these things that I should watch, that I want to watch, but none of it sounds good. Then you just flip and flip and flip and flip, and no, you got to come down and podcast, but you got to keep flipping at the same time, because you don't feel the urge to go down and do that. And so finally now it's like 11:41 at night, and I'm like, oh God, I got to wake up early and do other shows tomorrow. So I'm like, I do have to do this. So I figured, instead of just saying the dog ate my homework and not releasing something, because I'm so proud of being able to talk to this director. And by the way, Mr. Trites, if you are listening to this, I am so sorry about this first part, but I like to tell the audience what's going on with me. And I will say, when I've done this in the past, a lot of people have understood completely and also have had their own stories that are pretty much exactly like this. And that sometimes gives me a little hope as well. And I'm not ignorant to the fact that, you know, that of course I should be feeling these things, that these things don't go away, nor should they go away. I think it's just been a while since one's flattened me, as it's been an intense feeling day. So sometimes that makes the work a little bit harder. It's so weird, you guys. There has been, I had to pause this so many times, and it's just really rare for me to not know what to say to you guys or not know what to say next. I'm just so in my head right now. And You know, sometimes doesn't life just seem overwhelming? It's just like there's so much. And this is so weird. What a horrible example. But I was doing that bad thing you do after watching Vanderpump Rules and then reading people's comments about it on like Facebook and Twitter and stuff. And you kind of just are blown away how sometimes different you think about things than other people. And this, I forgot what I should have screenshotted of somebody once again, every week of it happens now with Ariana, people calling her like this fame whore that can't let it go and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, wait, that's how fame whore let it go. And even Sheena tonight saying, you know, she didn't go through the dark spiral, but kind of insinuating that Sheena was, which we'll talk about on the recap on Thursday, because I have some thoughts and things to say on that. But I will say that even in the course of some of the best things in your life, you guys know this, that you can also be going through the worst time of your life. And like, that's it. Like, I've had so many amazing opportunities this past year. So many just things that I never would have dreamed for or about that have happened. And at the same time, the worst year of my life. And not even just because of my mom. I mean, just the worst things. So those two things, like, you know, it's like you can be going through deep pain and have amazing things happen to you. Also, you can be going through deep pain and not share that with the world and just keep your head down and get through it and take all of these opportunities. Now, I don't know if that's what Ariana's doing, but I do want to posit that theory that I just think sometimes, man, we sometimes get behind a keyboard and we become these completely different people that seem completely unempathetic of anybody's situation, especially when it's something wrong has been done to them. We then find a way to turn them into some sort of villain. And that boggles my mind. It flat out scares me. But the whole thing is just sometimes life can feel overwhelming. It's like with all of this good stuff. I mean, if you've tried to contact me, you know I'm so hard to contact. I there's a thousand things that I need to be doing, or that I have a to-do list that is a mile long that I'm just like, how do I even begin to do all of this? How? You know, I can get the show out. That's, and I have good people helping me, but like, it can just be overwhelming. And that can be really daunting when you're already not feeling great. But I also just wanted to thank you for just letting me rant here, you guys. I guess you don't have a choice, really. But I was, you know, after this weekend, like, I keep bringing them up, my best friend Dusty. There are two people that I think have been the most influential in my life. And that is my friend Dusty and my mom. And, you know, they intertwine in all of these kind of beautiful ways, even though they were completely different people. And my mom loved Dusty so much, believed in Dusty so much, you know, and Dusty to this day. And that's why he is kind of like this older brother for me that will just kind of, you know, sit me down and tell me, hey, man, you're going down a bad path in certain ways. You gotta be open with me. You gotta use me, like, you know, let me be your best friend. And sometimes it's good to hear that because you don't want to, and I would imagine I'm not the only one that has thought this. You don't want to, you don't want to add your shit onto somebody else's shit. You know, because you do realize how tough life is and everybody's trying to get through something. So there's always been this thing of, you know what, I'll just keep this to myself. Or I'll just tell you guys about it, you know. And it's something I've just, like I said, I've never been good at. And also then it becomes that thing where I'm able to punish myself for not doing that thing of like, oh, I guess I must be a bad person. Another thing that I'm not great at, sharing with my friends. And it's something that I guess no matter how old you get, there is opportunity to try to be better, to try to communicate. And in the end of the day, you do know that actually ends up helping you. But my mom also, you know, Dusty, him and his husband are just amazing. They've been married. God, how long have they been married now? But he's just the best, his husband. I love him so, so dearly. But and I don't want to tell Dusty's story about coming out or anything because that is his business. And I know he likes to be private, But I was there, you know, I watched him go through what he went through coming out. And, you know, I have this kind of, I like Los Angeles. I hate to break it to you, you know, I have so many great people that I know out here. So many magic things have happened out here for me. But, you know, how we look at, you know, LGBTQ is very different than how we looked at it decades ago. And I will say, like, one of the greatest gifts in my life is my friend Dusty. And, you know, the things that he made me aware of, not just in how, like, to treat people, but, like, the things that I liked. You know, like showing me music, showing me movies, showing me literature, being open to things, being open to people. Half of who I am, you know, I owe to him to be able to open my eyes up to just kind of my limited worldview as a white, straight dude. A Catholic, white, straight dude, I was raised. Middle class, good family. I mean, our family obviously had problems, but, you know, like really lucked out on so many levels, period. But to be able to, you know, I always say I have taste because of Dusty. And I used to say I have belief because of my mom. But I have to tell you lately, that belief I've struggled with. I've struggled with belief in a higher power. Now, I was one of those people that went to church every week because of my mom, you know, like she would make you go to Sunday. I had to be an altar boy. I was confirmed, all of that thing that you have to do as a good Catholic boy. And then as I got older and it was my choice, I didn't want, you know, I would go on holidays and things like that. But I always said I believed in God, that I believe there is a higher power. And I think that's been challenged a lot watching what my mom went through in, especially in those last couple of weeks. Even though her faith never wavered. In fact, I have really strong memories that last week, which was just fucking horrific. She would shout out things like, God, give me strength. God, give me patience. And it was so jarring because it would be out of nowhere. And it would be in just the most insane situation that we had just gone, you know, and she would scream those things out. And, It was so hard to watch. And I went, and I usually don't do this, but I went a long time ago, about 5 years ago, I got my mom this, there's a company called Storyworth. They don't advertise on the show, so this isn't an advertisement, but it's this thing where you can send it to your family, friends, and it'll give them prompts like each week. And then they'll write over the course of a year, you know, all of these answers to questions, kind of their life. And I gave this to my mom 5 years ago, and my mom was a breast cancer survivor at that point. And she had the double mastectomy, and she survived that battle. Like, that's why, what a strong lady. What a strong fucking lady. How many cancer, she had some form of cancer for like a decade plus, you know, a breast cancer survivor. And I remember when that was the scariest thing. And I remember her calling me in the hospital. She was so messed up on drugs still, of like, I survived, I got through it. And even just in that moment, I realized just how scared she had been. And we thought that was going to be the worst thing. But I got this thing for her, and she filled it out. And we have this book, and she wrote, and it's like beautifully bound. And she got a copy for me and my sister and my niece and nephew. And it says, this is Mom, Stories and Memories. And my mom wasn't much of a writer. My mom was a doer. She, man, she could outdo anybody. She could work anybody to, I mean, she was just a dynamo. But not somebody like my dad was more of the poet. My dad was the funny man. My dad was the one that could tell stories that would have you enraptured. And it was so, it always tickled me so much that when my mom would come on the podcast and people would love her, and I know that made her feel so good because she never considered herself that person. She never considered herself funny like my dad, or you know, she wanted to believe she was, but she never truly believed it. So I was going through this book today.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Because when you're sad, that's what you do. You're more of a masochist and you're like, you know what? Let me look at my mom's story. But one of these prompts, I'll share this with you guys. What have you changed your mind about over the years? And she writes, well, while I can't quickly think of one specific thing I've changed my mind about, there are many things that have taken on a new meaning for me. As I grow older, yes, it happens to the best of us. I find myself more tolerant of things that used to really irritate and upset me. I attribute this change of attitude to a couple of things, mostly age-related and having to do with maturing over the years. I am a firm believer of the saying about learning to change the things you can and letting go of those things you cannot change. Again, my faith in God truly strengthens this philosophy in my mind. A good example is when I was dealing with breast cancer. I knew I couldn't change it, so I asked God to give me the strength to go through the journey according to his plan for me. Another one is to not judge others, as we often don't know what they're going through in their own lives. Things like money, possessions, and accolades are no longer a priority in my life. God, love, peace, and health are the most important things to me. Oh, she left out me, Ryan. Weird. She writes, my faith, prayers, and conversations with God carry me through each day and have been my strength and comfort in some difficult situations. I can honestly say I have not doubted my faith, and it's brought me much joy as it has grown stronger over the years. And that was good to read, and I know she believed that until the day she died. But I was talking about this with my friend this weekend, and I just said, listen, man, I don't know anymore. Sometimes I do doubt. And sometimes I don't understand. And especially some of the things that have happened in this last year, I said, well, listen, if my mom's up there, how is she letting these things happen? Like how, you know, there's like, what is going on? And, you know, I haven't gotten the signs. I haven't seen the bird or the butterfly or the symbol yet. And I know that is so stupid and petty and, you know, like kind of TV and movie that we hear about all of these kind of signs and stuff, you know. But I was talking to Dusty and Dusty said, listen, and Dusty's always sometimes can be one of the most pessimistic people out there. But he said, listen, I know without a shadow of a doubt there is something else. And he's not a practicing, you know, he's not practicing any specific religion, even though he is a Jewish. But it is interesting. Like, you know, isn't it interesting when somebody that you respect so much and you love so much, they say something, you're like, I'm going to use your strength to believe that is true because I need that right now. Yeah. Anyways, you guys, I don't think this has made a lick of sense. I'm so sorry about this. This is usually, if you know this show, this is not what I'm about. But I wanted to get this out because I have been quiet most of the day after I did Jeff's show and I talked with Kiki for her podcast after that. And then I kind of just shut down a little bit. So thank you for letting me do that. That helped. I'm going to try to do a Patreon episode after this, which is a recap of Traitors, which I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do that because I'm just not in that silly mood. But who knows? Patreon people, let me know if you end up liking it when I do it. But thank you for letting me do that. Now for a very hard pivot. We have Zachary Trites, the director. I thought this docuseries was so fascinating. Like I've said many times, if you've seen it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It just hit Netflix last week. And, you know, it is just wild. Like after years of hearing his childhood friend, Christian Hansen, talk about his research into Danny Casolaro's Octopus Conspiracy, which we talked about at the very beginning, what that's all about. Zachary and Christian began filming and investigating this story together. This began a years-long odyssey with around the United States to discover the connections between Danny Casolaro's death and his unfinished book about a complex web of interconnected political conspiracies. With Zachary directing and Christian as lead researcher, they partnered with Stardust Frames and the Duplass Brothers Productions. The Duplass Brothers, you know them. They are just fantastic. And they created this four-part docuseries called American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders. So I would say check it out. I think it's going to potentially keep you up at night, so maybe save it for the weekend. But I binged it all in one sitting, and I was a little shook. I was like, I need more. I need more. And I'm so thrilled that I got to talk to the director. So here is my conversation with this director. I will be back with a very hopefully silly recap of Vanderpump Rules on Thursday. Patreon, hello baddies. Thanks for sticking with me. Thanks for being patient. Usually I'll release episodes over the weekend over there, and I was in Chicago. As always, thank you for allowing me to have you be this kind of sounding board of some things that I still, like I said earlier, don't have verbiage for, of these feelings that I'm feeling. But I'm glad that I am able to actually speak these things to you. Thank you for sharing so many things with me. As always, I want to honor my mom, Rebecca Ann Bailey, and always sending good vibes and prayers to my dad, Bill Bailey, who I talked to tonight. He says hello to everybody. He got a card from a listener the other day, and he was very excited about that. And thanks, you guys are just the cat's pajamas, and you are. And we're going to do one more commercial break right here so I can play my interview with Zachary Trites fully without any interruptions, okay? So we're going to do that commercial break right here, which, by the way, thank you for listening to commercials and even visiting sponsors that sponsor this program that always really does help the show. I really appreciate that, using the product code, all of that stuff. But I also want this interview to be uninterrupted. So we'll do one more commercial break here, and then we'll come back with Zachary Trites. Welcome back to So Bad It's Good, presented by Betches Media. Yesterday, folks, I had the pleasure of watching a new four-part docuseries hitting Netflix this week that you will be able to binge this weekend. But I got to tell you, you are going to go down a wild road. I watched all four parts back to back, and I got to tell you, by the end, I was looking over my shoulder. This is really fascinating. It's called American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders. Now, when journalist Danny Casolaro was found dead in a hotel bathtub, police ruled it a suicide, but his family and colleagues believe he may have been murdered for investigating a conspiracy he called The Octopus, a hidden organization connected to stolen government spy software, a string of unsolved murders, and some of the biggest political scandals of the 20th century. Now, years later, researcher Christian Hansen pushes to uncover the secrets behind Casolaro's death and the story that killed him. We have filmmaker and now documentarian Zachary Trites with us. Zachary, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm just going to throw my last name is pronounced Trites, just for the record.
At the end of one of the episodes,
a lawyer calls me Trites, and Christian, my partner on this, was like, "You want to keep that in because everybody's going to call you Trites?" And I'm like, "No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll just..."
Wow, the mystery deepens. I know we're making jokes about this, but I got to tell you, like, where are you at right now mentally after this is something that started in the 80s and even further back that the mystery starts deepening? You know, having finished this is an epic tale. And even by the end, you can tell that you guys are caught up in the tentacles of this octopus, which I think is so fascinating based on the story. I mean, have you been able to decompress from this subject matter in any way?
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so, you know, when looking at it now, you know, it's like a four-part series that's about essentially the last, I don't know, 5 years of my life, the last 10 years of my friend Christian's life, you know, and it's like all just kind of tightly compressed inside of that time period. It's kind of surreal to think about, you know, where we've kind of gone and come from. It's hard to step away from this thing, and it's hard to, you know, I got into this because my friend Christian, who was a photojournalist, and he kind of separately started researching this just on his, you know, separate of working for the Times, the New York Times a lot. And he told me about it, and I was like, "Oh, that sounds weird. I had no relationship to this story. It was just through him and watching him kind of get deeper and deeper into it. And then it's almost like, I don't, you know, it's like a goo or like a virus or something. You know, as soon as you kind of start touching upon these things, getting into the story, you hear one thing and you hear another thing. And it's like, well, that is strange. And then it's hard to extricate yourself from that once you
look
down into it.
But you also treat it so fairly, is that you point that out. Like in the fourth episode, you point out how, you know, you can get caught up in these things. And that's the big question throughout this series was Danny, the reporter that was working on this, you know, did he just pull on these threads that led to nowhere? And it's almost maddening in a sense. And I thought that was kind of brilliant that you were able to put that together and even realize that. And, you know, you're dealing with some really intense characters like Michael Riccinshuto. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but he actually participates this out of coming out of jail. What, he was in there 26 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we picked him up from prison. The Danny Casalero, who died in 1991 after investigating this story for the last year of his life, midway through that investigation, his source, Michael Riccinshuto, was arrested by the federal government. And he said it was a retaliation for him telling this story to people like Danny. And but it was a drug charge, a major drug charge. And so that happened in March of 1991, when Danny went out to Washington State to visit him in jail when he first got arrested. And then 26 years later, yeah, Christian and I went out to pick him up from federal prison.
And when you pick him up, I mean, he's like, go, go, something isn't right. Something isn't right. When you're in the car filming this, what are your thoughts as a documentarian? Are you like, this is great footage, we're really getting it? Or are you just scared to death for yourself? Or are you highly skeptical in those moments?
I'm all of that and more. I mean, you know, I'm from the world of, you know, mainly fictional filmmaking, right?
You've won awards for fictional filmmaking. Like that's why I was so shocked. I mean, like, it's like you're actually now documenting this insane story.
Yeah. I, you know, Christian and I, neither of us had done anything close to this before. So we have all of the naivete that goes along with that. And which kind of opens us up to maybe more possibilities than people who have strict ideas about the work that they want to do, right? We were just kind of going in there with wide-eyed and just trying to understand what we were looking at. But that moment in specifically, I mean, that was early on in what we were doing, and I had no experience with this kind of work. And I was very, very concerned. Whenever you talk to Michael, and I didn't know him obviously until we met him there, but I knew about him. He has a past that could lead you to be concerned. There's a lot of people, I don't know anybody who's had as many close people to him die around him, and often under strange circumstances. So you just, you know, that's worrisome.
Yeah, very worrisome, yeah.
It's always intense with Michael. I've since learned there's always... there's very few mellow moments in Michael's life that I've seen. And so you, at a certain point, you kind of get used to it, but you just never know what's going
on. Yeah. Well, I mean, was there a point in this, cause how many years did this take you to put together?
We started, you know, the first piece of footage we had was 2017, really. And then we kind of sat around with it for a little, didn't know what to do. Like, I'd never made a documentary before. We just kind of sat around with that and then slowly grew that from there. And then we really started majorly filming in 2020, but still a long period of time. I mean, when Christian started this 10 years ago, 12 years ago, whenever it was, he was like, it'll take me a year to write this book. When I started this, I was like, it'll take me a year to make this series. Yeah. That ain't how it works in the octopus.
I mean, was there a point in here where you thought you were actually going to be able to finish Danny's work and uncover what these tentacles all came to? Like, did you think like, oh my God, at one point we really are going to uncover everything that he was searching for in this docuseries? And was there a point where you're like, this isn't going to happen at this point? We've got to put an end to this because we could keep going and going. Was there that moment for you?
I mean, there's a few different things that we were trying to do, right? So it depends on which one you're talking about. Like, we went in with a very sincere idea of solving what happened to Danny and figuring out what he was actually writing about, because what we had was thousands of pages of notes and several, you know, news articles from when he died, and also several government and law enforcement reports on what had happened, right? And most of those, many of those are contradictory. So we went in with the, you know, a sort of lodestar of let's figure out what happened to Danny and let's figure out what he was working on. And we kept that throughout. It's very easy to get sidetracked. And I think that we kind of eventually come to the conclusion that that is not without its purpose, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sidetracked is in fact, maybe one of the main things that these kinds of stories, one of their main purposes when you deal with anything in the national security or intelligence world or criminal world, you know, there's shells within shells within shells. And that's what this is. So to not explore that and not try to wrap your mind around that, wrap our minds around that would have been remiss of us, to, you know. But it's like, if you look at this story, the octopus, Danny's, you know, Danny's theory of the octopus, or just the individual stories that he was looking into, there is no beginning, middle, or end. I mean, this is a parallel, or it is the world that we live in. It's just a kind of darker parallel version of it. And it's like I think of it like an ecosystem. You know, there's no beginning or end necessarily to that, but you're there to explore it and figure out what the relationships are, who is what, to the best of our abilities. And I think that I feel pretty confident about how we did that. It's just a lot to take in a short amount of time.
Yeah, it's mind blowing. I mean, Danny called it the octopus because, you know, he started with the Inslaw case with the computer program, but then it kept going into these different directions and like tentacles on an octopus. And I believe that's where the name came from. But you said you started off with what happened to Danny. And that is just a really intriguing question because I was left really baffled too, because the thing that I keep coming back to and trigger warning for people out there, this is a little graphic, was that he had killed himself by, you know, slicing his wrists. But the one thing, he had sliced his wrist where he had, you know, sliced his tendons open, which wouldn't be allowing the person to potentially slice the other wrist. And then there was blood splattered all over the walls. That's the thing that keeps confusing me. And also the police work, you know, interviewing somebody that said they saw another man at that room, yet that actually they never potentially followed up on those leads. I'm kind of left questioning still. And in your heart, is there something that you feel internally? Because it could go either way. But that's one of the maddening things. Another maddening thing about these murders is that, like, what is it? What really happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we'd have to take each sort of death individually, I think, on its own terms, right? But you know, in the case of Danny, you know, I'm not a forensic pathologist, so I don't claim to have any major expertise in that realm. But we do have the interview with one of the paramedics, who's actually now a medical examiner himself, talking about what it was like to see that. And yes, he says that when he picked up Danny's wrists, the wrists, is in his words, flopped, right? Meaning that the tendon was disconnected and you wouldn't be able to create a grip without that to hold a razor blade. You know, that's his testimony, and we present it there. We have the files, actually, the medical examiner files on the autopsy that they eventually did. And it's just not specific enough about the tendon situation to say definitively what was going on with that, right? That's
yeah.
I think the, you know, I don't want to say the shoddiness of the investigation, but, you know, I have a lot of sympathy if the police went into that room and saw what they saw, which I've seen. I have a lot of sympathy with thinking immediately that it's a suicide. It looks like a suicide. There's a suicide note. There is a person. They are alone. There's no sign of struggle, or at least no sign of footprints or, you know, fingerprints or anything like that. So it's like, looks like a suicide. I think it was only in the family and the friends and his journalistic colleagues coming forward saying, wait a second, but you need to understand what he's up to, right?
And he told his brother, he told, you know, who your brother who pops up in this docuseries, he told his brother, if anything happens to me, it's, you know, just be wary. If anything happens to me, it's not an accident. It's, you know, something else. Like he warns his brother this. That's the other part of this that was intriguing.
I think that that's compelling. I think if you were, if you're of the mindset that Danny committed suicide, you could, knowing what we know about suicide, very much think like, oh, well, that's a classic warning sign or something like that of somebody who's going to commit self-harm. You know, it's like I struggle to kind of decipher the intangibles because you can arrange them in your mind however you want to, right?
Yeah.
But what we were really trying to do, I mean, short of somebody coming forward and being like, by the way, I murdered this guy, having definitive evidence of like, you know, I was with him when this happened. He told me he was done with life and this is how he's going to do it, you know, which I don't see coming forward. But trying to understand the investigation that happened afterwards, especially the Department of Justice FBI investigation, makes it a very clear point that Danny was... They kind of re-examined the Martinsburg, their investigation, did their own kind of thing, just so you know. That Danny was just a loner who was broke and alone and had been twisted around by these weird people who were just conspiracy nuts. And he didn't come up with any information. And he was so desperate that he committed suicide because he had gone into this maze. And was like, you know, falling apart, essentially, which I found compelling when I read it. You know, when I originally read it, I was like, Christian, dude, I mean, it's pretty clear here what happened to Danny. It was only in going and meeting some of his sources and going deeply into his papers and kind of reconstructing the last year of his life that that story kind of falls apart. So. Doesn't necessarily speak to the suicide versus murder thing, but how I think of it is like what is possible in the world is maybe bigger than what these investigators wanted to acknowledge, which is that the people that Danny was dealing with are not just kooks. They're not just conspiracy nut weirdos. They are dangerous and criminals. And often intelligence operatives he was talking to, and they live in a world where things are possible that are maybe not normally possible from a moral or, you know, even just sort of not physical standpoint, but you can do homicides that are.
Well, Mr. Booth, the Mr. Booth who you have, I mean, you show like a questioning of. And he scared me. He just flat out scared me. He's like, I was told the government would never look into this. I was told, you know, very point blank, you know, he obviously lived by a different set of rules. Now, who knows how much truth he's telling? And you also have a lady who was investigating this at the end with it goes into his place and she shows him a JFK. He shows her a JFK assassination video shot from a different way where the driver turns around and shoots JFK and says, this is the real video. The world has been fed the other one. And, you know, she even takes it to believe like, who knows? I know what I saw. But at the same time, he's also giving me a message that everything is not as it seems in this world. And that's the thing this leaves you with is this just really, and I credit you, it just leaves you with this uneasiness. And especially going into an election season, just remembering what our governments and other governments are doing behind the scenes. And that's the wider thing even past Danny. And I was thinking about all of this is that were there ever times even now where you have received weird phone calls, threatening messages, anything where I can't imagine how you're walking around and not looking over your shoulder at all times. Not that something's happening, but this information just kind of leads you to be spooked.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot in what you just said, but
I'm sorry. Sorry. I just get so excited that I,
yeah. Just like, you know, I mean, what we were looking into, we tried to treat it very specifically, which is like we were looking into Danny's story, which mainly happens about, you know, 30 and 40 and 50. And it kind of goes back all the way to World War II in some respects and the antecedents to the intelligence agencies that he's talking about. But you know, yeah, the story makes me paranoid, or the story makes me worried, because there are, what we find out, people in Danny's world exist. The people that he was talking to, some of them are dead, but those types of people exist. And I think, like, even if you take away the sort of secret stuff that he found, the kind of conspiratorial stuff, I mean, the stuff that was going on in the news at the time that Danny was looking into this thing, was, when you look at it through his lens, which is like all these things are connected. That's his whole thing, right? It's like there's all these different intelligence scandals, political scandals, but they're all actually connected through the same network of people, former and current intelligence officers, right? Those people are really dangerous. Those people are really scary. And if you look at any one of those things, you know, we talk about Iran-Contra, of course, which is like its own rabbit's warren of scandal and difficulty of understanding what's really going on there. But, you know, BCCI, which was a banking scandal where you had intelligence agencies like the CIA using the same banks that major drug, you know, narcotics traffickers are using. It's a bank with its own standing army. You know, it's a bank doing kidnappings, robbery, bribery, likely murders. This is a dark world. You know, I have no idea what's going on now. You know, we know about the 80s and 90s from telling this story. I hate to think of going on in this world now. I hope it's all just like digital manipulation rather than, you know, people being murdered.
Well, that's what I was thinking about. You know, 1991, Danny, this, you know, investigating, and then now with, you know, just imagine if Danny had been alive today and then going down these internet rabbit holes. And then it got led me to thinking of just complete insanity, like where we are with QAnon and things of that nature. And, you know, you know, just how conspiracy theories can really I've had friends where it's taken them over. They've changed completely as people. And that's what I think this docuseries speaks to as well, of getting caught up in these things and never being able to let it go because you feel like your eyes are open to something that you can't ever walk away from.
Yeah, I think we talk about that, but this sort of idea that you will get the ultimate truth revealed to you. And, you know, if you just had, and I think that was our feeling going through it, if you have just one more piece of information, if I just knew one thing, like that little carrot on the stick right in front of you keeps you going for that. And there is no one thing, right? And that's what's frustrating. But I think that what we see it in terms of, the usefulness of that for the people who are that he's looking into, that we were looking into, that's not without a purpose, not entirely without a purpose, at least. And it might be many purposes, but it it creates kind of like a smokescreen for whatever you want to do. If you're, say, you're in the drug business, right? And you are moving massive amounts of heroin or cocaine or methamphetamine, for instance, you know, it's helpful if, and say you're doing that with, you know, perhaps even people who are associated with the federal government, at least in some respect, right? Helpful if, when people hear about that story, they hear that you're talking to unreliable people who have no grounding in truth, and they are just, you know, pathological liars and all this kind of thing. It makes the story kind of go away. You know, mainstream publications, you know, probably rightly don't want to be associated with any stories that could be untrue or false. And this is the murky world that we went into, where truth and fiction are intermingled. And I think the difference for us is trying to understand why, and see that there's something actually interesting to be gained beyond the hard news value. And I think there's something interesting to being two dudes who don't have the, you know, journalistic, we fact check things, but we took it in a very subjective point of view. And I think we try to show that we don't know everything that's going on here. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't need to be stated or that it shouldn't come to light. Something that's ambiguous doesn't need to be completely ignored, I don't think.
No, a couple more things, because I really do find this whole thing fascinating. You guys are going to really get into this. I know, I'm forgetting the gentleman's name, but Danny had bumped into him at that bar. And then this is the gentleman that could have been potentially involved in his murder, because he gives two different alibis of where he was during that time. What was his name?
Joseph Cuellar. Yeah. Joe
Cuellar. Yeah. And you talked to his son in this as well, but it just reminded me of when you said certain things can be a smokescreen, and you know, there is a point being made, I think, by his son in this, where it's like, listen, you know, nothing is really by accident. They're also like, Danny could have been used. Danny could have been trying to, you know, being led to push a certain narrative so other things can happen. And that's such an interesting thought as well. The other thing that I wanted to ask was, how is Christian? This is your friend. This is how this all started. He also, you guys, portrays, I believe, Danny in all of like the past, you know, footage with you reenacting and certain things. And I thought that was so eerie at times. But how is he stepping away from this? Because, you know, he really got involved as well as you did. But how is he holding up?
Christian's doing well. You know, he's an old friend of mine. And so, you know, I think that it's nice to be able to step back from this for a minute of the last, you know, 10 years of trying to understand the story and just put it out there for a minute and have some distance to it. But like you said, like we talked about, there's no fully getting out of it. And there's always little things coming over the transom, you know, I just can't avoid it.
I mean, you ended this perfectly. I don't want to give away. You ended this so perfectly. The fourth part where I was like, oh my God, it's just, it never ends. And I thought it was really a powerful ending, but this gets released this Wednesday, and Netflix is the number one streaming service by far. It is now going to be in the households of millions upon millions and millions of people. What do you hope people take away from this as a filmmaker? What is your feeling going into this? Something that you put so much work into, and now it's ours, and you're going to see Reddit threads. You're going to see people picking this up, trying to unravel more threads. Where are you at with that?
I mean, I look at the story as kind of a cautionary tale, I guess, or it is almost like a ghost story. It's kind of a haunted story for me about what happened to Danny, where this software program Promise is almost like the ghost or the boogeyman or something. It's like, who knows how powerful this thing is? Or maybe it's like the ring in the Lord of the Rings, right? It's like one thing to rule all kind of thing. And I mean that in terms of like, you know, everybody these days says like, do your own research, you know, or there's like that kind of mantra online that probably started with or really picked up steam with like the Epstein thing. And this is kind of a cautionary tale of that too. You know, I mean, this is an exponent of what can really happen once you go down in that. And it's not, you know, you don't get to get the truth that you want. You get to get the truth that you find. And it's not always great. So I frankly worry about people, you know, I worry about people taking things too far on their own. I don't know. There's nothing we can do about it. I mean, what's the alternative is just shutting up and not mentioning what we found, you know?
Yeah.
But I think there's stuff that we bring up that needs to come to light and is simply an interesting tale. And I think that, you know, I'm not out here to like avenge Danny's death, no matter which way it went. But I do think that there's something to demystifying, you know, this story. Some people follow this story on the internet. They inadvertently follow it because Christian was the one who found a bunch of Danny's documents and somebody put them on the internet. And I think people don't even realize like who, you know, the cyber sleuth, realize that Christian's kind of in some ways there, the beginning of that, years ago. But so I hope that it at least corrects the record of a lot of misinformation and things that have swirled around that. And, points hopefully in the right direction of what happened with a lot of these things and demystifies some of this shady world of the octopus. I think it's a fascinating world. I think it's something that that is true to probably how a lot of things work in our current day and age. You know, there's a million ways you can relate it to the world that we live in now, the highly electronic and even more militarized world that we live in now. And I sit around, you know, from a personal standpoint, I sit around thinking about how scary it is if in the early 80s, this is what was happening with the privatization of military intelligence. What the hell is going on now?
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to tell people out there, this is a sensational story, but he does not sensationalize it. And I think that is a really important thing. He, you know, it's very, because there is a times I'm watching it going, it's all a part of it. It's all this. And like, you know, I wanting to be like, this is it. This is definitely, this is true. This is true. And you really do. You keep back. There is a distance you put on this, which I think all good documentarians should have.
I like watching it just from an aesthetic point of view. I'm not going to sit around saying that we didn't have fun making this thing. You know, I mean, it's an adventure, I like to think, but we have certain things that we wanted to dispel. You know, we put the document in documentary. There's just so many documents, you know.
You guys are filing FOIA requests. You get to actually see Danny's, like, you know, all the evidence finally after being, you know, and I can't even imagine going down that rabbit hole of all of his notes, everything that you guys did, the amount of research, that's just got to be wild. There's got to be thousands upon thousands of pieces of document to document in this.
It's just a real pain in the ass.
So I guess finally, you guys, and just also, I'm like, I love learning about history. This will take you down, like, and I forgot about, or not really, I was never told even about the October surprise during the Carter administration that potentially helped Reagan get elected. And it's really fascinating even thinking about where we are politically now and how these little things in terms of the world can actually help candidates in our country. And I think right now it's really interesting to actually bone up on some of these pieces of history. Where are you going next? Because you now are a switch hitter. You are a filmmaker that tells fictional stories. You are now a documentarian. Where is your heart leading you next? What's next for you as a filmmaker?
I think it's leading me in all of those directions. to this story, you know, I mean, if we were given the opportunity, there was stuff that we just couldn't put in that we would love to have sort of followed up on. There's unbelievable stories remaining that we haven't been able to get to. There's related things that Christian and I want to do that, you know, while you're working on something for this many years, other stuff pops up along the way and you just have to.
Yeah.
So there's those things. And then I have fictional projects that I want to do that speak to me on that level. I mean, if you want to talk real shop on like filmmaking and kind of process and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's like this stuff is all, in my brain, it's all kind of heavily related. Like my last movie was a heavily researched period piece set in the 1860s that we shot like a documentary. And this is a documentary set in largely in the 80s and 90s that we shot like a feature. You know, I mean, it's like all
yeah. kind of
many parts of the same equation. For me, it's extremely different story.
Yeah, it's beautifully shot, guys. It's beautifully edited. It's, you know, a little different in that sense than your normal documentary. I'm really excited for you guys to see this. And listen, you kind of teased that thing of there are many little pieces of the story that we weren't even able to talk about. And now I'm like, what are those pieces? But I know we're out of time because I'm like, damn, is there just going to be now a series of the Octopus Murders documentaries where we're going to unravel those threads?
I don't know. We'll just see. But, you know, there's more if people want it, you know.
We'll okay, see. We want it, man. We want it. Please, if you know, just now I'm going down the rabbit hole. Please just email me later and tell me what one of those are, because you guys,
you know, just put $5 into my Venmo account.
And we'll is there a GoFundMe for Zachary and Daniel? I think that's actually well worth it. But I'm really excited for you to see this, guys. Let me know what you think of this, because I would love to have a discussion about this, you know, with you guys as well. Zachary Trites, thank you so much for being here. I know I was overly excited, but I just watched all four. I was in a vacuum with this docuseries yesterday, and usually I kind of pick up things and like come back to it, and I just mainlined this, and I think that was potentially dangerous.
It's intense. I mean, I watch it and I'm just like, oof, that's too much.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. I'm really excited to see what the feedback of this is and see the conversations that are spurned from this. So really amazing work, man. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So Bad It's Good is a Betches Media production. The show is hosted and produced by me, Ryan Bailey, with Meditza Lopez and Sandra Fryer. Additional support provided by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Rebecca Steinberg. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Video promotion by Laura Valencia. Be sure to send us your emails at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey@gmail.com and follow the show at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey on Instagram. And for additional craziness, go to patreon.com/sobaditsgood. Stay bad, baddies.
Betches.